Blog Talk Radio.
And hello from Atlanta, Georgia. This is Franchise Today. My name is Stan Friedman, and I'm a guest host today sitting in for Paul Segretto, who along with a great many from the franchise world is actually on his way to Atlanta for the Franchise Leadership and Development Conference. Speaking of the Leadership and Development Conference, as most of you know, the event is presented each year by Franchise Today's friends at Franchise Update Media Group. Of course, Franchise Update is a strategic partner of Franchise Today, and we wish best of luck and safe travels to all of our friends attending this great event. Next week, Paul's going to be traveling and coming to you from the West Coast Franchise Expo, where he'll be presenting with Teresa Huska and Lee Plave, the topic being one that's pretty topical in these times. It's Web 2.0, Social Networking Plus, Data in Franchising. And in light of all the recent data breaches, this is a very hot topic and a session that should not be missed by franchisors of all sizes from emerging to legacy brands. Check the West Coast Franchise Expo for session date and times, and for this and as well as other great educational sessions. Just ahead of the West Coast Franchise Expo, Paul will welcome Evan Hackle as his guest on Franchise Today. Evan is the CEO and the founder of Engage Consulting and a member of the IFA's Franchise Relations Committee. Paul and Evan will be discussing engagement between franchisees and franchisor and how engagement is a key factor to strong interdependent franchise relationships. That comes your way next Wednesday, October 22nd at 10 a.m. Central, 11 Eastern. And before I introduce you to today's guests, just a quick reminder to you listeners that with all that's going on in the various states around the country and at the national and federal legislative levels, it's extremely important that we all do our part to thwart the aggressive attacks coming toward franchising, existential attacks toward our very business model. So please support the Franchise Action Network and the International Franchise Associations in their efforts to protect the brand of franchising. For more information, please visit franchiseactionnetwork.com and the IFA website at www.franchise.org. And with that, it's my pleasure to get down to what we're here to talk about today and introduce you to Charles Willis and Craig C. Conti, who are the co-founders of a brand that's born out of troubled times. And it was a great story that I learned to see how you guys were able to take lemon and turn it into lemonade following Katrina. Our guests are the founders of Pino's Palette. Charles and Craig are going to tell us how they started their sip and paint brand at the height of some really tough economic times and have successfully grown into a world-class franchise brand despite being a relatively new industry segment and an entertainment option while competing against multiple copycats in their space. Pino's Palette has been ranked by Entrepreneur Magazine in its annual Franchise 500, and it's one of Entrepreneur's fastest-growing brands, top service franchise, and top new franchise recipient in 2014. Also recognized as a leader in franchisee satisfaction by Franchise Business Review, which means an awful lot to me, and that's quite a meritorious honor. And they got their FBR award honors for two consecutive years, 2014 in the above average category and ranked number 8 in franchisee satisfaction in FBR's Emerging Trends Report. You guys are doing some things right, and I, for one, can't wait to hear more about it. So, Charles, Craig, welcome to Franchise Today.
Stan, thanks for having us. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to...
Yes, Stan, pleasure to speaking with you.
And I'm real happy to hear from you guys and learn a little bit more about how you've emerged as franchisors. And I think it, you know, great story that was shared with me about how all this was born out of tough times with Katrina. Why don't we start there and talk about how the two of you actually found each other?
So we've told this story a few times, Charles and I together. We're pretty good at it now. So I'll tell the first half, and then Charles will chime in and kind of tell how it all came together at the end. So Mom brought the family to a painting class kind of in the middle of nowhere, and my brother and I did not want to go to it. We were not very excited about this. This was over the holidays, probably in 2004 2004 time frame. So we packed a cooler of beer with us and drug it into the painting class. It was a very beginner painting class, so we were able to do some painting, but more so my brother and I had a good time with the beverages in hand. And the idea just stuck with me to, you know, introduce the Pinot or wine into something that's fairly intimidating, such as a painting class, and make it much more fun. So I pitched the idea for several years, probably never going to do anything with it. Charles and I both ended up in Houston after Katrina as roommates and pitched the idea over golf to him as well as many other friends. Charles, pick it up.
So, hey, Dan, this is Charles. So when I heard the idea for the first time, I mean, just like I'm sure our parents would tell you that, we kind of thought it was kind of crazy. You know, what are these business professional engineers, consultants, know about the art world? And, you know, really nothing came of it from that conversation. You know, fast forward now a few years, I meet my wife, we get married, and she's looking for something to do with her sister in Houston. And she had mentioned that they really love to go do like a painting class. And so I'm jumping online, I'm doing a whole bunch of searching, can't find really anything that can be done in one night. You know, all the ones that are out there are, you know, multiple evenings over multiple weekends, and they're all about, you know, fine art. And, you know, that moment it kind of struck, wait, I've talked to Craig about an idea, and now that I can see that there's definitely a customer base, a female customer base that would really, really enjoy this, I believe I gave Craig a call that evening and met him at a bar happy hour that we were scheduled to go to anyway, and pulled out the pen and the napkin and started writing the business plan down.
Great story. And you say that you guys have a model that's different from others, and that your guests and people who attend your classes don't have to log in or sign in for a multiple week or a multiple event kind of a program. They can actually come for one and done if they choose to, or come back and do it on a per class basis.
Yeah, so the customers,
that's right.
they go online, they sign up for the evening or the painting that they want. They bring their, you know, some of our locations are BYOB, where they can bring their own wine, and some locations that isn't available in those states. So they actually have bars set up inside these studios. The customers come and have a fantastic time while they're getting led step by step through the painting process. And end of the night, they've created a painting, created a memory, and a lot of fun, and they tell their friends about it.
That's great. And you touched on, I guess, what might be a key demographic for your customer base being the soccer mom or the female, either married or unmarried, with friends that might want to get together over a glass of wine and have some fun doing some painting. But I see, too, that you guys are out there with VetFran and making offerings to veterans. In fact, I read, I think, an interesting story about a veteran who came out of a couple of tours with a Purple Heart, and he and his wife together have gotten into the business. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the appeal there?
Yes, Dan, so the you know, that night out experience, and that's an important thing to remember and understand. You know, people come to us for a fun night out with their girlfriends, a date night, or even corporate team party. We do kids classes, the whole spectrum. So the fun night out and the painting and sipping obviously is a big part of it. You know, our owners and operators and franchisees all over the country, you know, 100 plus now, you know, Wayland's one of them. We have several servicemen and women in the system, but Waylon White is a particular story that is incredible, joining VetFran and providing support to them to get the business started. He served two tours, Bronze Star and Purple Heart, injured in the line of duty, and lucky to be alive and coming to Pino's Palette. You know, Victoria really kind of brought him into it. And even as guys, while it's a lot of time female-focused, guys get a lot out of it too, because you know, we find that creative side. A lot of us engineers and accountants kind of discover that artistic side of ourselves and find a passion for it. And once we get over the I'm too cool for this type of thing, and we learn that, hey, we can drink beer here as well, it becomes something that the guys love just as much as the ladies.
So you said the first time that your mom took you to a program like this, you came kicking and screaming. You find that's not the case. Or is that still the case with guys that come along with their wives or spouses, or are they kind of like trailing spouses on the first visit, and then they become raving fans on the way forward?
Yeah, I'll talk about my experience. You know, Charles will. I know Charles has seen a lot of things in the studio too. So my first experience at that point in 2004, I was a computer programmer. So doing anything artistic or cultural was very far from my mind, and discovering that side of myself was very eye-opening and enjoyable. And seeing that painting the next day was a level of kind of pride that I hadn't seen before. Obviously, my brother and I cut up and had fun, and those memories were great too. And we see that in the studio time and time again through all of our customers and painters. I think Charles, you talked about seeing some accountants, some class of accountants, and their experience.
Yeah, it's really fun to see. Some of our studios actually offer off-site parties, so we'll actually bring the event to, you know, a company or a corporation, actually have an event at their location. And a lot of times those events are more 50-50 female to guy. And then what's fun, you look across the room and you see the guy is almost getting into the painting as much, if not more, than the ladies, because I think there's a aha factor that, hey, I can do this. I didn't think I could do this. I was scared to try it, but now that I know I can do it, I'm going to make sure that I bring my wife, my girlfriend, my mother, you know, out to do this, you know, do this step-by-step painting process that Pino's Palette makes look so easy, and anybody can do it. And then guess what? I can drink beer while I'm doing it.
and for the gentlemen, it's an incredible date night, for sure.
I bet it would be. And I read that there are others in the competitive space, and that you stand apart from a lot of those. And maybe that single class visiting experience is one way. Can you share with the audience some other things that make you guys uniquely different in your approach to this opportunity for the consumer? And then we're going to come back and we're going to take deeper dives into who it is that this franchise opportunity makes sense for, and how they need to learn a little bit more about what makes the perfect profile of a franchisee. But just last question on the customer side, a little bit about the unique competitive set and what makes you guys different at what you do.
Yeah, so
sure, I'll take that
on
one.
Go ahead,
Chris.
All right, so on the consumer side, you know, differentiation is important, and any company has to look at that constantly. When we designed Pino's Palette, we didn't design it as a painting class or really targeting that specifically. We want it to be a fun night out, and that's in our mission statement. We want it to be beginner-friendly too, and obviously cater to our audience specifically. So all of our locations are very different and premier in this paint and sip space. You're welcomed at the door. We have real wine glasses. There's places to put your purses so paint doesn't get on them. We have really nice bathrooms, great lighting. So we spend money on all the extra things that really matter to our kind of audience. You know, same kind of theory between Kmart and Target. You know, our female clientele definitely want to be in a place that's in a restaurant or bar feel and setting. They definitely don't want to be drinking out of a plastic cup under fluorescent lights and getting paint on their expensive purses and nice clothes. So, you know, having all these extra things and catering to that audience is really what sets us apart. On top of that, you know, the excellent customer service and partners and owners that we have that deliver that day in and day out is really incredible, and it's what we hear back from our customers constantly.
Yeah, and I'll just add on to that. So just like what Craig was saying, everything, you know, begins with customer service. You know, even at the website, at the door, throughout the class, and even when people leave. But we've positioned our brand to be the premium offering in the paint and sip space, and that allows us to have a much wider range of customer base at our studios, because people know when they come to Pino's Palette, they're going to have a fantastic time. They're going to be everything that we promise on the website is going to be delivered upon. And, you know, you don't have to take our word for it. You can see the fantastic reviews we have all over every social media aspect out there.
What's the typical class size for one of your sessions?
You know, I would say the typical class size for us, we have a few different models. We have a one-room and a two-room model, and we're even testing out a three-room model coming soon. But typically the first class size, the one-room, is going to be anywhere between 40 and 50 people. Then our private parties in the private party rooms will range from 20 to 30 people.
And do a lot of people come that come as strangers and go home as friends for life?
It's amazing how often that happens where, you know, you come in with a date or you come by yourself because you want to paint that painting that evening, and you sit next to people and everybody's kind of going through that same experience as you're going through, almost like you're at a concert. And as you start to paint the background, you're talking to your neighbors, you're talking about, oh, you know, what did the instructor just say? Oh, I really like this song. And then all of a sudden now you're talking about, you know, your families and your backgrounds and all this stuff. And then even have people that start creating painting groups, well, where they'll reach out, hey, when's the next time you are going? I'd love to go with you. And then kind of creating friends that way.
Last question on the franchise. Okay.
It's not uncommon. We have a sing-along, some karaoke time in class, and I think we're well into, you know, over 20, 25 proposals in studios all over the U.S. too. So there's definitely a lot of community and bonding and sharing in these classes.
Excellent. And last question before we go to the franchise side of the equation, just from the consumer side, how do your franchisees do their marketing? How do people find out about the opportunity that you provide? I mean, this is such a great living, breathing story. It would be hard for me to believe that just a coupon and a mailer could paint a picture, if you will, of what this night's experience might look like for somebody who learns about you for the first time. So how do those franchisees get the marketplace aware of who they are?
I'll take this one. So marketing is our forte. And it's something we've learned very carefully. It's, you know, it's very digital and technical now. So, you know, we put all of our owners through a significant boot camp, training them constantly on marketing. What's key for our business is to really customize it to that local community. You know, reach in and really get a hold of all the neighborhood groups, the PTAs, you name it. Just getting ingrained in the local community, festivals, and partnering with other businesses. So we really train our franchisees to do that. Something we haven't touched on yet is we developed our own proprietary software system that literally saves them close to 30 to 40 hours a week. So just having the time as a small business owner to go do those marketing things is incredible competitive advantage for our owners and operators. So it's a lot of what you think, shaking hands and networking, but we also have some incredible digital strategies in the search engine space, search engine marketing, pay-per-click, things of that nature.
And we're going to get more into detail on some of that technology and some of those systems as we take a deeper dive into who it is that becomes a potentially good candidate for your franchise and who it is that you would embrace as somebody who ought to own one of your franchises. I thought it would be a good idea for us to just set the table from the consumer level and help the audience understand the value proposition that the brand brings to the consumer. And then we can segue from there, and now's as good a time as any to start talking a little bit more about the opportunity itself. And so in my many years in franchising, I've been a franchisor of more than one brand that was very, very fun to be a consumer of, but not so much to be the franchisee. So I was in the chicken wing business for a while, and to be the guy on the end of the phone that's dialing up to have, you know, wings ordered to 10 of my best friends and we're all in front of the big screen and watching the football game, it's a lot of fun to have that delivery come to the door and our party goes on. Being the guy who is the franchisee in the wing business, the fun, not so much. The guy who's frying the wings and delivering them is having a bit of a different experience than I was being the recipient when the doorbell rang. In your case, it seems to me, though, that there's a tremendous segue of opportunity for franchisees to become franchisees after having first been guests or been consumers of your product. Is that a fair estimate on my part?
I would say absolutely. A lot of our franchisees were customers of Pinot's Palette and then saw how much fun they were having there, and then they looked around there seeing how many people are in there, and they started counting up the heads, times it by how much they paid to come to class, and then all of a sudden now they're starting to do a rough P&L in their head, and then they reach out to us. Kind of a little bit different than the chicken wing business is funny because I actually know some people in that business also. Our franchisees are more party planners almost, where they get to have fun along with the people that are coming out to the retail location to have fun, and really, really enjoying what they do, and then have the processes in place to they don't have any questions if anything does come up. Unlike I'm sure you have some wild and crazy stories on some delivering chicken wings to some college town.
More than we can talk about on air. So who else would be a good candidate for, if we were to profile the perfect franchisee, I'm getting a sense that it's somebody who's got personality and outgoing personality. What other skill sets and disciplines, as we're going to get into those discussions about marketing and pay-per-click and your technology, what else does a franchisee that's a good candidate for your brand bring to the party?
Charles, as Charles is mentioning, just that sheer passion for the concept is critical. Obviously, you got to love what you're selling to be successful. There's really not one mold to cut, because we have people that have strengths and weaknesses in just about everything. We have comptrollers, we have marketing professionals, we have software testers, ex-military, you name it, we have it. What's neat about a franchise system in general is we can help fill those gaps. So if they're great at marketing, then we can fill the gaps in operations and procedures and give them those things to operate on the day-to-day. So, the typical franchisee, if we had to kind of name one, is definitely, husband, wife, looking for something fun to do. They don't need to have an art background or talent, but they need to love that experience and the fun night out. At the end of the day, they're really party planners. They're putting on a show and a party for people every evening, and private parties and corporate events. So that's where their passion needs to be, obviously, just bringing energy to the concept. And obviously the system gives them a lot of what they need to do on all the how to do these things and why to do these things.
Was there going to be another add to that?
I think Craig said it, perfectly. Passion, and then, everybody has strengths in certain parts of what they're good at. And, our system kind of fills in for those things they're not as strong with, and then they become successful franchisees by being, a well-rounded person with the passion and the tools as needed, like we were going to talk about later, to run a successful business.
Well, I think you're both spot on in your assessment of not only your brand, but I think all brands, that the second most important asset that a candidate can bring with them, second to money, is passion. And finding those hot buttons that make somebody wake up every day and not feel like they're getting dressed to go to work, but they're fulfilling their heart's delight. They're fulfilling what they really love to do. If money were no object to somebody, what would they want to wake up and do today and spend as much time at it as they possibly could? Is as much a hallmark for successful franchising, I think, as the money itself. So how do you guys go about finding your franchisees? You're up to what, close to 100 units in fourth or so year of franchising? Is that about right?
That's right. We're right at 100, about to break 100, which is exciting after, a short four and a half years, 30 states all over the U.S. So you know, finding people, as we talked about it, a lot of it comes organically, people coming to class. We can't speak enough about the intensity that they need to bring. That's really the one independent variable for them to be successful, and probably in anything in life as well. But, you know, we also, as a brand, we're doing national advertising and partnerships all over the U.S., you know, so we spend a significant amount of money on the national level, Entrepreneur Magazine, pay-per-click, getting the word out there that we exist, especially in markets that there is no paint and sip. You know, we're the really some of the first ones to get into California and really grow a brand out there. So just getting the idea out there, visiting some of these shows that you had mentioned, the West Coast show we had been to for the last 2 years, and, you know, really just getting in front of our typical audience of people wanting to start a new business. And, hey, I also want to kind of like what I'm doing, too. It's our bread and butter.
Awesome. You're listening to Franchise Today. I'm your guest host today, Stan Friedman, sitting in for Paul Segretto, who, along with a good part of the franchise community, is en route to Atlanta for the Franchise Update Leadership Conference. And we're talking today with Charles Willis and Craig Ciccante, who are the co-founders of Pino's Palette. And we're learning a little bit more about how their opportunity for business development is growing and casting a palette nationwide for people who have passion about being in business for themselves, not by themselves, and in a business that allows them to make new friends and as you called it, sip in what, Charles?
Call it the paint and sip industry.
The paint and sip industry. I haven't heard that phrase before this week, but I'm going to hold on to that one because I think I might just become a customer, if not a prospect for a franchise here in the Atlanta marketplace. Tell me a little bit about
that's
the
great
footprint
news.
For tell me a little bit about the footprint for one of your locations. How big a location, what kind of a real estate commitment is the franchisee making, and how big a factor or fear factor is there in that they're taking X number of square feet in prime, I would assume, in primary real estate space at retail. And tell us a little bit about the footprint.
Sure, absolutely. So the way we approach markets is that we look at a market like every market is different. And when we go to that market, we have to do local research of that market, finding out not only the demographics, but also the psychographics of that area. You know, where do people live, and then where do people shop, and how far are people willing to drive? So once we really break down all the science behind picking a location, once we find an area that we're looking or wanting to go into, we're going to be looking for a space that's anywhere between 1,300 square feet to 2,500 square feet, and those ranges will determine what we're looking for, what's available, and then we'll need to decide based on that price per square foot for that base rent, what we're willing to do size-wise. So one room or two room, like we spoke earlier. You can imagine, you know, downtown Manhattan, we're going to be looking at a lot smaller square footage retail space than
sure.
If we were in, you know, Houston, Texas, right? So just different price points, different layouts. You have different customers in every area with different levels of comfortableness of people being, you know, closer to them or further away, or, and so on and so forth. So we look at all these different things. We actually fly out to the cities that we're researching the space. We do an initial site selection and lease training. And then we're working via, you know, thankfully the phone and internet these days, virtually helping them help negotiate those LOIs, negotiate those leases, and then even going as far as kind of helping lay out that space from an architect. So they're really hitting the ground running and building that, you know, that solid foundation to build that business onto.
Is there a big commitment beyond the real
estate?
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, just to brag on Charles a little bit here. You know, his background is in operational excellence, and I tell you, one of the hardest things that a new business owner, especially in the retail space, the hardest part about it is finding a site and getting it built out. It's the biggest piece. And, you know, the support and knowledge that Charles brings to helping them do all that research, you know, he laid it out, kind of made it sound simple, but I tell you what, it's not. And the support and documentation and everything that he and the operation team bring to our franchisees is absolutely incredible. And it's everything, you know, finding that right location for you on the profit side, not necessarily the main street address, but something that's going to maximize your profit and not necessarily your sales, and then get it open and operating in a streamlined process is incredible.
At the single unit level, besides the actual lease itself, what else does a franchisee need to invest in beside the real estate and the initial franchise fee? What kind of an initial all-in is a franchisee looking at to get a unit up and running?
Yeah, so our range is to, you know, open a single store, and, you know, obviously there's ranges we are mandatory to put into our franchise disclosure document. But typically we tell people it's about $100,000. That includes your franchise fee, includes the build out, and really every dime that comes out of your pocket to open up that single room location, including 3 months of working capital. And then if we're looking at studios with bars or more than one room, then it's a little bit more.
Now, are your franchisees typically single-unit owner-operators, or do you have a model that offers multi-unit or area development ownership for somebody who might be looking for more than just a single bite of the apple?
Absolutely. So we have... I mean, I should know this off the top of my head, how many multi-unit owners we have. But right now, currently, we have about 35 people that own studios with similar ownership. So what that means is that we have a bunch of people in our system that either came on and wanted to do more than one location out of the gate, or they opened up their first location, had such success, and is now opening up their second and even third locations. We have some studios that now have three locations. We're going to talk about, the PTS software system, but that really is what allows our studios to be able to manage more than one location in a business like this that has such operational overhead. Without a software system that we do have, it'd be almost impossible to be able to run, you know, more than one.
Yeah, so, you know, one trend we're seeing is that, you know, obviously the studios that open and they're successful, they want to open more. We've seen our Tulsa franchisee, Lisa, who was highlighted on the cover of FBR, now just opened her third location in about 2.5-3 years. But we're also seeing, as we prove ourselves as a franchise system and the industry proves itself, we're seeing bigger investors come in and see that opportunity. You know, area developer of 4 locations in Tennessee, same in the Northeast. We have some in California. So we're seeing more and more of that now as the industry continues to grow and mature, and those more seasoned franchise investors are getting wind of it.
Do your franchisees get protected territories?
Hey, this is Charles. Yes, they get protected territories. It's based on population density and then geographic area. You know, if you had somewhere where there's, you know, half the location or half the circle would be out in an ocean somewhere like California, where we're growing quickly, you know, we'll draw that protected area a little differently. So there's a protected area, and it's actually negotiated prior to even, you know, joining the system.
Yeah, you know, Stan, that's a really important question to ask, and any listeners considering franchising should really dig into not, hey, am I going to get a territory, but also what's the growth strategy of the company? You know, you want to be really careful if you join a system that their growth strategy aligns to yours. Is it to completely saturate a market to grow brand presence? Maybe great for the brand, but maybe bad for you locally. So understanding that general strategy, lucky for us, we can look at a city and know how many locations should be there for our standards. We've always had the saying that, you know, turning one happy franchisee into two unhappy franchise partners is a really bad idea. So we're really cautious. And if we ever go into an area and we're not quite sure of what the demand is in that area, then we just hold the area. We let them open. We hold it for 6 to 9 months. We talk to them about how their studio location is doing. And we typically are trying to get them, if the opportunity is there, to open a second location to fill that demand.
So I heard something that you just said that kind of leads me to believe that you're as much sensitive about building a culture as much as a brand, and that like-minded people are very important to you. Why don't you spend a few minutes telling us a little bit about how you work your selection process and how you introduce someone who may have started as a customer or may have just found you on a web-based search for a business opportunity. But in any event, there's got to be a structured process or a licensing system that enables you to assess who it is you're talking with and help them learn, not just about your concept, but also about your culture. How do you go about doing that so that you can protect your brand?
I'll get this started and ask Charles to clean up anything that I miss. So, you know, our culture is everything. You know, Charles and I came from the corporate America. You know, the direct deposit fairy is great, but we learned a lot about what we didn't like in corporate cultures. And we fought very hard to lay down a set of values that this team really truly embraces, and it's not just a slide and a deck they see once during our Discovery Day meeting. So how do you do that is obviously you really have to lead by example is one good idea. But, you know, talk about it verbally, talk about your values with a large group and build that communication channel into our system. So, you know, our culture is really built on open communication, creativity and innovation, being professional at the same time, but having fun, you know, giving back to our community. So we're, you know, in our recruiting process, obviously we're looking for those people and asking questions to try to vet those people and identify the ones that are going to live and breathe those values on the day-to-day basis. And, you know, that's what really builds that culture. And continuing, again, on the ongoing stage to maintain that culture is, you know, have sessions where you sit down with either headquarters or even large groups of the franchise and say, hey, are we living these? How can we improve? And continue to vet those and make sure that we're living them daily.
How long is your selection process? And can you just walk us through from cover to cover, you know, how many stages or steps are there? You said you have a discovery day. Do you do those early where people come early in the process, or do they come later closer to a decision day? How does that look, and how many direct contacts do you have with these candidates to help ensure that you're bringing the right people whose eyes are wide open and are thinking both with the left and the right side of their brains?
Yeah, I'll take that one, Craig, and then, you know, help me out if I forget anything. Okay, so how our process works is that, you know, obviously all the different marketing aspects that we do to get people to look at Pino's Palette as a business concept, when they actually contact us for the first time, they fill out a very short questionnaire, very, very short, it's probably an understatement. It's literally their name, their phone number, their email address, where they want to open. And then they get access to what we call our virtual brochure, which is an entirely different website that starts the discovery process for us. And our philosophy behind that is we want to be able to give anyone that potentially is thinking to purchase a Pino's Palette as much information that we can so they can make an informed decision. So they're able to even start getting that information before even coming in contact with us over the phone. After they go through that first stage, so we call that kind of stage one. After they're done with that first stage, there's an application, a little more in deep depth application that they fill out, asks a lot more questions about them personally, and this is when we start to vet them to see if they're going to have those financial means to open up a location, but also have the the things that make franchisees successful, like we talked about earlier, that passion to fill out some questions about, why do you want to open a Pino's Palette? Why do you think you would be successful? Some of these directed questions to see what those answers are, and that really helps us determine if this person is going to work well within our system. After they fill out that application, we actually jump on the phone with them and walk them through the next step, which gives them a lot more information that is not publicly known. Once they get through that kind of second stage there, we invite them to come down to Discovery Day in Houston, where they actually come down. We have them go to one of our classes, and then we have a full day meeting following the class to talk about the ins and outs of, what we're bringing to the table. But it also gives the entire team a chance to meet this person face-to-face and actually have some conversations with them and make sure that they're going to live and breathe those values that Craig was mentioning earlier. So that's kind of stage three. Stage four, if they make it through that discovery day and it's all thumbs up on our side, we will offer them to join the system by sending out our franchise disclosure document. Obviously, they sign that, and there's that fun FTC waiting period. Once that's complete, obviously, we're answering questions about that document and going back and forth and working out the demographics of where they want to be, how big that protected territory is going to be. We sign that document, and so once they sign that document, that is the end of kind of stage four, with stage three being the discovery day. And then they join the team, and that's when all the support and all the knowledge starts getting transferred to that franchisee to open up and be successful in their market. So it's kind of a breakdown from the beginning to the end, kind of how our process works from a very high level.
Excellent. And so now they become a franchisee, and they're part of the family, and they're going to come to training. Tell us a little bit about how training works.
Training gets kicked off from day one, so we really don't mess around at all. When we sign the document, we do it electronically, and then we go right into jumpstart training on that same phone call. So we're actually going through about an hour's worth of training about the ins and outs of what they need to do right out of the gate to be successful and to make sure they're kind of following that timeline. So those projections that they have set out are hit within a certain amount of time. So we do that first thing right over the phone, and then we schedule a flight to come out to them, or we actually fly to them, see the sites that we help them set up, do the more site selection training at that point. And then we come back, and then there's a full support process that we do to help them get that site, get those marketing wheels moving, etc. They come to Houston for a week-long boot camp training where it's a full immersion into Pino's Palette, learning everything from small business administration to accounting to our PTS systems to our artists and what makes them great to the marketing and operations of a studio. So at this point now they've gone through the site selection process. We've got them pretty secure in a retail location. Now they're learning how to market their business, do the accounting in their business, start hiring and all that fun stuff. And then we have ongoing support calls that happen quite often based on how close we're getting them to open. And we're having about their all these different aspects and things that they've learned all the way up to the point where we actually send out an artist trainer to actually teach and train their entire initial staff to be an artist by an artist that is actually certified in our artist training program. And that artist trainer will not only train them, they'll actually even teach that very first class that they have in that location so those artists at the local level can see how it's supposed to be done. And there's a lot of different obviously trainings that go on during that, and then they're open, and then we move from having to teach them up that learning curve, how to open a business, how to train that initial staff, how to do that grand open market. And now we move to more ongoing support where we're helping them be successful, get more people in the door, help figure out that marketing mix that works best for them. And, you know, like Craig was saying, you know, be as profitable as we can have that location be.
So well, just to jump in, if you don't mind,
ahead,
just to jump in.
No, please.
I'd like to step back just to that recruiting process and talk about one thing that Charles didn't mention. In that final stage, we also invite those prospects, once they're awarded the franchise, to call some of our many franchisees and speak to them specifically, you know, to get that validation from our other franchisees and also start to build a rapport. You know, our partners, our franchise partners, they want to be involved in some of that selection process. You know, we take the responsibility of guarding that partnership very seriously. Everybody, all the partners in the system want to see that culture maintained, and they know that new partners coming into the system could definitely jeopardize that. So, you know, we get their feedback as well. It's much about a fit both ways. So it's not just us approving them. Every step of the way is kind of like dating, going to a marriage of sorts, and you want to make sure that it's a fit on both sides and it's not just, here, fill out this application, do you have the check, let's sign up. We want to make sure it's a fit for both people. And then, go ahead.
No, please finish your thought.
Yeah, and then, you know, on the getting open side, we take the customer service of supporting our partners as serious as we do our customers. You know, one thing that Charles didn't mention, which is critical to that opening process, is you know, Charles has a master's in project management. We've put together a step-by-step roadmap to go from literally signing day. Actually, there's a whole section pre-signing day that we give them all the way through opening and your first month or two of business. And it's a check step-by-step roadmap and project management plan from them to work through that has links to all the supporting documents. So it's as easy as it can possibly be to get this paint and sip business open, and obviously efficient too, so we're not wasting a lot of money on things also. So that roadmap is absolutely critical.
Well, what you've been articulating is evidence that you guys have had a lot more than just the idea of bringing a bottle of wine and some paint palettes together, that your project management and computer and technology backgrounds have been brought to bear here, which is what it takes for a responsible franchisor to be able to put the word sustainable in front of the word growth. You made an interesting point. When I was a franchisor, I used to tell candidates that came to Discovery Days that it is a lot like dating, and sometimes, you know, it's one and done, and you know that this isn't where I want to be. Other times, you know, it leads to a relationship, and that culminates in tying the knot. And the other thing I would tell them oftentimes was that when you become a franchisee, it's a lot like having kids. So if you've had children, you know this. And if you haven't had children, you've been a child, and you know what you put your parents through. So at the end of the day, it really is about, in the beginning, the business is very dependent upon you. You've got to be there all the time. You've got to nurture it. You've got to guide it. You've got to just be there constantly feeding it and helping it grow to the point where you hope it becomes, because of your nurturing and your guidance, a little bit more independent, and then ultimately comes to the place where you're not having to take care of it anymore. It's now taking care of you. And that's the life cycle that I think we're all looking for when we invite franchisees into our worlds.
I love that analogy, and we use that question too when we know there's parents in the room. Are you ready to have another baby? You can't expect to go on vacation for a week, you know, with a 1-month-old, right? Or leaving
that's
a 1-month-old
exactly right.
Home by themselves. So I love the analogy.
So with the time we have left, we've teased it a few times that we're going to dive a little bit more deeply into your software and into some of your systems and some of the proprietary tools that you use to get to the place where you've earned the accolades that you get from Franchise Business Review and from the validations clearly that you're getting from your franchisees that have been with you for a while, helping newbies come along and learn that this is a good place to be. So I don't know whether it's which one of you actually it's going to be that wants to take the lead on telling us a little bit more about the software and a little bit more about some of the things that are unique to the business from those systems perspectives, but I'd like to use the remaining time to help those candidates that may be listening and have learned about this wonderful brand and this wonderful opportunity and how they're going to go about learning more from you as they progress. Let's talk a little bit about life for those people after they become franchisees and the kinds of systems you've put in place to secure that they've got the best opportunity going forward.
Charles, if you don't mind, I'll kick this off.
This is Craig's baby. I would expect you to help us out here.
All right. So my background is I built custom software for about 7 years, both, you know, actually writing the code, doing the analysis and project management, and worked very hard, went back to school to get a master's in business to get out of that line of work. And so starting Pino's Palette, you know, in having one location, we were very successful for that intensity and passion that we brought to the local market. And it grew very quickly. All of a sudden, with volume, you need technology to survive, or else you're handcuffed to your desk, managing reservations and spreadsheets, making mistakes, etc. So we built the PTS, Pino Technology Suite, off of that. And I really framed it and architected it off of other similar hospitality-type businesses like hotels and airlines. Classes are a lot like flights. And a lot of things can happen with that. So we built this enterprise strength system with my background and obviously the support of Charles and all the franchisee on the design side. So it has, you know, everything you can imagine in it, you know, CRM systems to track private parties. It has reservations management, classes, payroll. Staff can see their schedule. You know, it supports our week-to-week transfer of our royalties and credits across the system. It has a point of sale system with a touchscreen, card swiper, cash drawer, printer. Obviously, we've extended that even further into the mobile space, launching our iPhone application on January 1st. What it allows our team to do is be able to have all this data at our fingertips to make very smart business decisions, monitor the success of our studio, and get the things done that we need to do both while we're at the studio, but out and about in the system. So with my iPhone, I can check a class. I can see who's working that night. I can schedule a new artist. I can be at home on my couch at evening watching sales come through on the point of sale system. So all these things that technology has brought in the beginning, we really didn't see the opportunity. But as the business grew and grew and the volume grew, we saw it very quickly, and we invested heavily into this system. By being able to architect and do a lot of the work myself, we have a full-time software programmer in here now, and we constantly work on new projects that are on our technology roadmap that help not only save time to our partners, but also drive revenue through loyalty and rewards programs, reminder emails, you know, the iPhone app. Obviously, they can market to their people. So it's a full-functioning enterprise-level technology suite that help them with everything to run that business. I'd say, you know, just to hit on the FBR satisfaction reward, obviously the technology is huge and light years ahead. I mean, it's a $2 million software system. It's light years ahead of what many franchise systems have, obviously, because of my background and the amount we've invested in it. The FBR satisfaction survey, I think, comes mostly from the culture we've built, though. Yes, the technology helps support them. They love the tools involved. But what they really enjoy is that they're in a real partnership. They're not sent to their island to do what we tell them to do and don't think or don't do anything different. We really embrace innovation in every step of the way in our process, in our communications. We're constantly listening for new ideas. The franchisees work together for new ideas, reaching out to each other, they've even developed their own kind of self-service mentor program where new partners will get paired up with, you know, experienced and seasoned partners. So that's why I'd say they're really happy. And Charles, I'd like to hear Charles's thoughts too. They're really happy because they feel like they're part of the solution and growth. They're really expected to contribute to the system and not just take from the system. I think that makes for a really happy partnership overall.
I'm gonna dive in here and get the brag on Craig a little bit. You know, I always tell him I wish it was like this big, I don't know, jumble gym or a pool full of, you know, those little fun balls you go to like Chuck E. Cheese or something, that he could, you know, dive in and play around, because everything's online and you really don't get to see it unless you're actually logging into the software, into the cloud or whatever. But it's this, you know, thing that has developed, the software suite that has developed over time, and all these new functions that get added, on a weekly, sometimes basis, quarterly basis, that all connect to each other. You know, I know when I was working as an engineer, you know, there'd be, you know, one system I had to log in to go do something, and another system I had to log in to do something else. What Craig is made and architected, and he says enterprise system, but we know what I hear is there is a one login system where all the information that is put into it kind of spiders out into all the other systems that are out there, from the website to the iPhone application to the point of sale to the management software on the back end, what we call Pino Admin. You know, the information is in real time and is seamlessly integrated to everything else that is out there. So it's one of those things that people hear about it when they're going through that discovery process, and they're like, oh yeah, that's really neat that you have that. We get to show them some screenshots at the discovery day, and they're like, wow, I didn't envision, you know, that. And then they come to boot camp for their training, and then we actually train them on the software, and then their hair's kind of blown back, you know, like they were going 100 miles on the Autobahn with the top down, right? They're like, wow, I had no idea it did this much stuff. And then that's not even the end of the, them discovering what this software does. Once they get working in the business and start using it on a day-to-day basis, it really becomes, you know, I think we pretty much get an email or a phone call from everyone that opens up and says, oh my gosh, I had no idea how much this helps me out. And then, you know, almost every single time they say, there is no way that I would want to do this type of business without this software package.
Awesome. So Charles, hey, I'm going to have to ask you to let me just pull it back for just a moment, because we could go on another hour if time would allow, but it won't. And I don't want to let this hour end without giving you the opportunity. Craig, maybe I'll ask you to just help the audience find you again. How can someone who wants to learn more get in touch with Charles and you and learn more about Pino's Palette?
Yeah, the easiest way is to head to the website, pinospalette.com. There's a franchise section in there which has tons of great information, including an article on 10 questions to ask about paint and sip software. But that's really the best place, and you know, filling out that simple lead form, it's literally five blanks, hit submit. You'll get in that virtual brochure and all the goodies, and we'll start the journey with you.
Excellent. Charles Willis, Craig C. Conti, I want to thank you both for sharing an hour with us and helping us learn more about this amazing brand that you've birthed and given life to, called Pino's Palette. I'm Stan Friedman. I've been sitting in for Paul Segreto. Have a great day, and this is Franchise Today, out.